Hello, hello, hello. I am your chef, Silvana Salcido Esparza, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Your Mouth.
In Your Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood to lick it right, lick it good, show you how to
look. Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets. So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Your Mouth.
I got the goosebumps.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey there, and welcome back, folks. Once again, I am your hostess with the mostest, Munoz. And folks, are we surviving? Are we back at it? I mean, we are second week into September. Like I said last week, we are back to school, back to work, back in the kitchens. You know, back into the groove and the life. Are we surviving, people? Are we surviving? That's what I want to know. Here I am pushing through and trying to get back into my groove. But like Jeanne once said, it's a groove thing. It's got a funky swing. Other than that, shout out to Amazon Music for featuring me. I know it's happening sometime this month, and they're doing a 6-week feature on me, and I couldn't be more humbled and grateful to Amazon Music for reaching out to me and seeing the work that I've been doing here. So thank you to Amazon Music. If you're not listening on Amazon Music, maybe you should if you own one of those devices or something. You know what I mean? You know, your girl, I can't say her name because I own one too and she'll start speaking. A little bit of good news. And I never start with a little bit of food news, but a little bit of great news because you all know I've been really obsessed with the Corn Kid. South Dakota just named the viral Corn Kid its official corn ambassador. And if you haven't seen the Corn Kid, it's corn. It's just a big lump of knobs. It's got the juice. I'm obsessed with him. The whole thing made the end of my summer. It's been on repeat here. And other than that, October 12th is the day, folks. What day it is, I can't tell you, but it's going to be a good day, I hope, for your girl Munoz. And that's about it. I think that's all the news I got for today. But I want to get to the getting on because I'm really, really, really excited for the icon that is on today's podcast. I did not even know who I invited on today's podcast, but I quickly found out. Oh my goodness. And I don't think you all are ready. So without further ado, please help me welcome the one, the only, Chef Silvana Salcido Esparza. Say hi.
Hola, hola. You said it's so sexy. Usually they call me Esperanza or
no
pronunciations.
No. Are you related to Raul? Raul Esparza, Broadway icon?
I'm actually related to all Esparzas in the Americas.
Oh, well, listen, I feel like as a Munoz, I'm related to all the Munoz.
You probably are. There's only one Esparza that came. After that, we're all descendants of that Esparza, which, by the way, married into Moctezuma's family. So by marriage, Moctezuma is our ancestor, if you're an Esparza.
Oh, wow.
I said that to Moctezuma Esparza. I said, hey, how did you end up with, like, your ancestor's name? And he went, I don't even know my grandfather. I said, you are related to Moctezuma Esparza.
Look at this.
Or Moctezuma himself.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm like, yes, you are. So I got his information. I put him together with my genealogist, who happens to be what? My cousin. And next thing I know, Moctezuma, Esparza, and I are cousins.
That's amazing. Listen to that, In Your Mouth listeners, starting with the history, and we haven't even said hello just yet. How are you and how's the weather in Phoenix?
I am good. The weather is hot as F, but I guess yeah. It's that way in the whole country.
Yeah, it's warm here in New York, too.
I had a shoulder and bicep surgery, so I think this week the pain has subsided, but boy, let me tell you, I'm 62. The older you get, I found that real fast that I am becoming a senior because I could cuss, right? Because this shit hurts. Yeah, yeah. But the strap does not look good. There we go.
No, so, but you look gorgeous. And I mean, listen, I figured you had to beat somebody up because you are badass. But before we get anywhere, first and foremost, thank you for giving me of your time, of your super busy schedule to come here to chat with little old me on my Big Gay podcast. It is an honor and a pleasure indeed.
My pleasure, because when it comes to queer, it's dear and near, right? When it comes to my people, I'm down for the brown. So anytime, I am there.
Anytime, indeed. Well, listen, before we get into the meat of it all, and we're going to get into the meat, I have to do what I have to do, Chef Silvana. And in the grand tradition of In Your Mouth, I need to wish you Happy National Cream-Filled Donut Day.
Ooh. What kind of cream? Chantilly, Bavarian, crema. You know, there's different kinds of creams, right? Pastry cream, creme anglaise.
Boston cream, creme anglaise. Man. You know.
And Mexico, they're really heavy on that cream.
Are we a donut person? Do we like donuts?
Well, let me see. Can you see that? Hija del panadero. Father, I have 800 years of donuts and bread in my blood. Yeah, yes. I'm an anything person. I was before you. I got caught up watching how to make bolillo because I'm gonna use it as therapy on my shoulder.
Yeah,
I'm gonna by hand make bread like my father did using my great grandfather's recipes.
Yes, okay. Because I read your like. One of your ancestors was like the baker to like the king of Spain at some point, correct? Yes.
In medieval 1200s, my ancestor was the royal pastry chef of the king of Spain, Alfonso el Sabio.
That's incredible.
There's one line, and it's the baking line, which we still have, that has continuously been making bread for over 800 years.
Wow. And we've talked on this podcast about, not you and I with another guest, Jack Hazen, have talked on this podcast using baking as therapy, but like that was like mental health therapy. And I've never thought about using baking as physical therapy, you know, and that's like a really, really interesting concept on this National Cream Filled Donut.
There you go. You know, my dad was a hottie. And he never worked out a day in his life. He grew up since a little boy making those volcanoes, right? You know, yeah. For the pambirote, the conchita, and his dad's bakery. Yes. And his father grew up the same way. So they were like naturally buff. They look like Mexican wrestlers.
Oh, my God. And I was just in Mexico City a few weeks ago and saw the Lucha Libre and had some of the best conchas of my life. Yeah, it was delicious, 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 delicious. Well, I think we're here for National Cream Filled Donut Day. And you know what? No matter what you celebrate out there, whether it's Chantilly cream, Bavarian cream, or I don't know.
Any kind of cream.
Any kind of cream that you wish. We celebrate you on this day. And moving right along into this day in gay history, I was wowed. I'm wowed by every part of you that I have read, Chef Silvana. And In Your Mouth, listeners, Chef Sylvain is a big activist, and I thought how very apropos on this day in gay history. In 1970, Chef, did you know in New York City, Gay Activists Alliance stages the first of an orchestrated campaign of zaps in protest of continuing police harassment, heckling Mayor John Lindsay as he enters the Metropolitan Opera House for its opening night gala.
Nice. I love that.
Right?
Heckling used as a political tool.
Yeah. Honestly,
we should go back to heckling.
Heckling and, like, so that you can't go anywhere, you know? Like,
right. Queer heckling, which is way over the top, as opposed to regular heckling. Heterosexual heckling.
Nah, they don't know what they're doing.
Nah, you know? Just a queer heckling. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, we will cut you at your knees.
We've been practicing for a long time. Those cocktail parties are not just for cocktails. We were practicing.
Honestly. Well, I want to get to the getting on because we have a lot of ground to cover today. In Your Mouth, listeners, if you don't know, but you probably already do, or if you don't know, you better. Chef Silvana Salcido Esparza is a baker's daughter, an activist, and a chef. She comes from a long line of cooks and bakers and was trained by her grandmother and parents in business and in the kitchen. Now she's busy training the next generation. Chef Silvana creates award-winning food and restaurants in Phoenix, where she is celebrated for her contributions to the city's vibrant profile. Her food has been featured in Esquire magazine and on Food Network's Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Chef Silvana has been a semifinalist for the James Beard Award numerous times and has been inducted into the Arizona Culinary Hall of Fame. While Chef Silvana's culinary expertise has earned her plenty of accolades, she is also a successful businesswoman and a promoter of the arts. Chef Silvana advises and mentors young chefs in training and has been an outspoken civil rights advocate. As a citizen of both the United States and Mexico, she feels a personal responsibility to elevate popular perceptions of Mexican-American culture and has been doing so for many, many, many years. I usually start at a place, at a very beginning place, at a love of cooking place, but with you, right? Because you are a celebrity in your own right, but in a very different way than anybody I think that has been on this podcast as of yet. And that's in the sense of you are this Phoenix icon. You are this activist who stood up to the sheriff. You are this chef who has this restaurant this iconic food history in Phoenix, and you have all these things. I mean, just Google, if you Google Chef Silvana Esparza, I mean, food is culture. A woman who represents her heritage. Chef Silvana, known to many as badass chef who stood up to our former sheriff. I mean, it just goes on and on and on and on, and it's absolutely incredible. What do you want your legacy to be?
Legacy, that's a loaded question. It's so egotistic to think about legacies, right?
Because we never do.
Of me, if it's legacy work that, in fact, my life has been, you know, as a queer person who swore never to have children, I swore when I was 5. I got my ass whooped because of it. I knew that I was everybody's mom. I've always had that feeling. When you do my chart, I'm a cancer. Oh, poor me. You know, it's like, oh, yay. That's a tough. It's hard to be with myself, right? Everything has to be passionate. I am a gay man in a lesbian's body. I've been described that way. I feel that way. When I see Sunset Boulevard, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to do my house like that, you know, like Norman Desmond. I just have this passionate. And one of the things that as a queer person, you know, grew up in a Jehovah's Witness family with, like, Betty Crocker as my mom, with her high expectations of what sit proper curly hair. I always had curlers in there trying to straighten it out. You know, she was trying to beat the gay out of me and make me into a proper woman. She made me into a proper woman, then I started modeling. And that's not my life. It's never been my life, that heterosexual normative life. But that's what I was trained for. So bored out of my mind, living in a life that was not for me, I focused on the bakery and the commerce part. I liked making money. I like making things, but I like the end result, which is happy people. And I'm happy people, too, because I got some money out of it, right? Money gave me freedom. So I equated that stuff early on. I started selling candy at age 8, 9, 10. I gave more cavities to all these little white kids. Mm-hmm. And then it segued into carnitas at my dad's bakery. At about age 15, I had my own business. I was making, on the weekends, $400-$500 sometimes. On the weekends, every weekend. That's a lot of money. Yeah. For in the 70s, for a little 15-year-old. I was dressing like, you know, the clothes that my mother wouldn't allow me to buy. When she was buying it, I would be able to buy them. And so I found that, and I witnessed my parents who came to this country with a third grade and sixth grade education, no command of the English language whatsoever, yet within a year of opening their bakery, within months, they're already building a custom home, buying that big old, you know, what Mexicans do, go buy the car, right? Yeah, yeah. Buying a car, looking good, looking fly. So I equate that stuff. Do you think I'm going to go to college? No, I'm going to go to be like my father. But the thing was, I didn't want to be like my father. I wanted nice clothes. I wanted all the good stuff. Not the heat of the bakery, the tortilla factory, the machine, the burners, my uncle's making bread. I was like, okay, I've had this my entire life. I want to get away from here. So I moved to Miami. And for 8 years, I was in Miami, dreaming about going back to that bakery and working in the downtown Miami in the banking world, you know, with the cocaine-riddled $20 bills, you know. I was the international banker, and that I sat with Colombians and, oye, brother, bienvenido, ven acá. I even know how to talk Colombian and Puerto Rican and Cuban, because, you know, it's different than Mexicano.
Yeah, of course.
And then I went back. I went back to my father. I had to play head row for a little bit, so I got married to handsome. All the boys loved him. Handsome guy. And I tried that for a while, but it wasn't for me. So I went back to California, and I ended up back in my dad's bakery, making carnitas and guisos and things again. So that was the second chapter of you know, like on my knees, having to go back home and say, I'm sorry, I am a baker's daughter. My heart has not been happy driving BMWs and, you know, shopping at Neiman Marcus and living that life.
Yeah.
You know, the fake life. That wasn't for me, you know. It was fun. I'm not gonna say it wasn't fun. I'm glad that in 1979 to 1988, which was the fun years in Miami, I was there for it. But when I went home for business, and that meant the bakery, and that meant Mexicano. I wanted my culture. My culture was not over there. When I said I understand Cuban and Puerto Rican and all that, because I do, but that wasn't my culture, right? Yeah. I wanted my culture back, and I definitely got it in California, second capital of Mexico, right?
Yeah, and then just moving into Phoenix and being such a cultural icon. You know, we're talking legacy work here just because it seems that you have done so much, and there is so much drive, and there is, you know, there is support for the arts, there is activism, there is not only love of food, but it's changing perceptions of food. And And how do you change perception of food by not only cooking incredible food at the same time? You know, there's so much of that. Where's the drive come from? You know, what keeps you going? Because you're not stopping anytime soon, even after the surgery.
Reading. Look what I was reading. Full service. Uh-huh. This is a good book. I'm reading this book because it's a autobiography. And I wanted to see the format of the book because I wrote an autobiography and I'm going to self-publish. Where does it stop? It stops when you stop, when the battery gets pulled out or the cord gets unplugged. Mm-hmm. I look at it this way is I don't have time to be dicking around.
Yeah.
It's a short life, period. I think about my father chasing the American dream, coming to this country. Buying the house, the new cars, the business, blah, blah, blah. And it's a rat race, right? And I see what it did to him. So I've been very cautious of following in his footsteps, but not emulating him to a T so I don't fall and step on the cracks. And I'm not my father or my mother, for that matter, you know. And the world is cruel to somebody like me. Like you, mm-hmm. You know, the queer part, the brown part in a white world. I can go on. So that which does not kill you makes you stronger. True. I'm a chingona. I'm a badass. I don't take shit from anybody.
Why? No, I wouldn't mess with you and your lowriders. No,
I wouldn't mess with you either. Because <Yeah. laughs> I'm one of those people that goes from zero to I'm going to kick your ass.
No, ma'am.
But having said that, having experienced from day one discrimination from my own family, my own super hetero mom who knew I was queer when I was little and just kind of tried to beat me into the closet, you know, mm-hmm. until I succumb or something. But having had that, I'm a survivor. I'm very resilient, right? I got that outer shell, whatever. But there's so many out there who do not. Right? Yeah. I did an interview for XJW, queer XJW, Jehovah's Witnesses, for a local magazine. And we sat in this room, and these poor kids in that room, man. I mean, it was like, ooh, I know exactly the pain you're feeling. I know exactly the not allowed to talk to your family. All of a sudden, you know, they become drug addicts. They become sex addicts. They go freaking crazy, or they're so caught up with that bullshit that they were fed in the cult. Now, I'm a survivor. I've gone to therapy over this stuff. I made sure I took care of myself. But my empathy is to others. The same thing happens in 2010 when we have a nasty, nasty law here, SB 1070. Show Us Your Papers was the nickname of it. And I was like, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. And they asked me, the newspaper asked me, and that was it. And I became an activist ever since. And then we had SB 1062, you know, the gay laws. And it doesn't stop, does it? And now instead of going forward, for the two steps we took forward with gay marriage, we're going way back to the dark ages now, is what they're trying to pull us. Now, that heckling and my years of stand up in San Francisco, or act up rather, mm-hmm. you know, all that old school mentality, we have to get that activism back. We got fat in the gay world. We need to get in shape, skinny, off the drugs, off, and get busy getting active. Active. Yeah, we have to get active again. People learn from the queers how to become active and get things done.
There are times that I feel like I am part of the last, I'm almost 42, and I feel like I'm part of the last generation that like remembers the AIDS pandemic, remembers what it was like to be out in these streets fighting for marriage equality, fighting for, you know, equal rights, fighting for all this stuff, getting shut out of City Hall here in New York, right? And being in the streets. And now, like, these younger generations, because of the work right? Some of the work that I've did, but much more of the work that you all did before I even got here, right? That have put us here don't have a reference point of like, oh, we still need to, hello, this wasn't free, you know?
And we're still back. There's no time to be resting on our laurels, to be kicking back. No. Yes, have fun. Yes, enjoy life. Yes, be queer to the hills. Yeah. But don't forget it. That it was not too long ago that we were just given the right to marry. You know, it really chaps me when I have to pay more in taxes because I was single, quote unquote, I've never been single, than the heterosexuals next door and with kids, right? Yeah. I couldn't adopt my own son because Arizona had a no same-sex adoption. You know, there's so many things I can go back just a handful of years ago that quickly we can go right back. Quickly. And I paid more taxes than these motherfuckers and I don't have the same rights? Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, it doesn't... It's messed up, and there are people out there, young people out there, really doing the work. Shout out to you, Queen Jean, who just had she is a trans activist here in New York City that has been in the streets practically every day at this point, you know, fighting for our rights, fighting for their rights, fighting for everyone at this point. So,
and that's in New York. Can you imagine in middle America?
Right.
Where they say you all a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Absolutely. I want to get back to the food for a second. You know, I love these conversations and just going down. It's kind of what the joy of this podcast is, in the sense of I just let it be, right? And in talking to queer food people, queer chefs like you, we often don't have a space to do this, right? To relate, to talk to somebody also in the food world in some aspect that like kind of gets us and kind of just, you know, like gets what it's about. You understand what I'm saying here? And I find it interesting. I usually start, like I said, at a place of where does your love of food come from, right? Because I like this story of the journey of hearing like, oh, we were in grandma's kitchen. So we've heard the 800 years of history. We've heard the guisao and the trying to get away from it. But it sounds like, is the food driven more by the activism and by you wanting to change a perception? Or is there actually a love of cooking there?
All the above. The love of cooking is, first of all, I'm a natural at it. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really good at it. It's easy. It sounds like it.
I mean, the food is gorgeous.
That's bonus to it. I can sit here and we can talk about, pick a topic, and I'll go, oh, I see cabrito en salsa de chile de árbol, cabrito negro. Let's invent something, cabrito negro, right? So we're going to ash all the chilies and make like a mole, and then we're going to smother it and put it under earth, right? I could do that. I can just go. So there's a natural ability. I'm not good at a lot of stuff. I got two left feet when it comes to dancing and all kinds of stuff. Memory's bad, can't spell for shit. But when it comes to food, and there's people who are far better. I'm just a natural. I have like an ear for it. Like if it was music, a lyrical ear, I have a same thing, a nose, everything. But what drives me is that my mother died when she was 58 and I took care of her that last year. Now I was already going to culinary school. I put that on hold for her. So when she died, that was it. The passion, I told you I'm a three-time cancer. I'm driven by passion. Mm-hmm. And the passion and her steadfast, and she was a gourmet. All they did was travel Mexico and come back and feed us the food that she ate wherever it was at. In the 60s, she was in Oaxaca. And so that passion, that dedication, my father's family legacy, the natural ability. My brothers all know how to cook real good, even if they don't do it. It's there. My grandmother was a Tarahumara indigenous who cooked Tarahumara indigenous food at home. And we grew up that way. We grew up with those customs and, you know, the sana sana colita de rana and put mm-hmm. Vicks on mm-hmm. it and eat before you go. Estás muy flaca, engorda. I used to say, you're gonna regret that when I gain weight. Yep. You know, your skirt's too high, all that bullshit. That's how I grew up. I love every last bit of it. I love the chancla coming at me. You know, I love the trenzas at church being pulled my head back, you know, because I'm not behaving. I loved all that. But there was an identity crisis. My grandmother was illiterate, Tarahumara indigenous woman who grew up in the Sierra in an hacienda that belonged to the rich people. Yeah. So for three generations, her people had been there working indentured, right? My mother was a white woman, didn't look nothing like her mother. Who, in turn, they hid the fact that she was indigenous. But they both loved food, and they had like a team at home. My grandmother would do all the prep, all the roasting, everything up to a certain point. And then my mother would come home from the bakery and put it together into a gourmet meal. And those were the things that, to this day, drive me. When I spent almost a year traveling in Mexico, at first, I was going to study with an American chef that was living in Mexico. But after 3 days of that, it didn't feel right to my core. Before I could put words into my head as to what I was feeling, I had left. Later, I figured it out that I didn't like the fact that she was in Mexico appropriating, teaching white people the stuff that she stole from the Mexican señoras. Mm-hmm. I ended up, by the grace of God, with those same señoras, or better señoras in Tehuantepec, who took me and I want to say they taught me, but in essence, I didn't cook their recipes. They gave me el soplo de la vida, that of life. I was 40 years old, man. I was still freaking heartbroken because my mother had passed away. And life had been a little weird, you know. I was single, and no kids, all this stuff. And I'm like, chinga tu madre, I'm going to go and change those erroneous perceptions, the molten yellow cheese, mm-hmm. the red sauce, the fried everything. And because I know it's different. And when I got there and I land with my first woman who was making iguana, that was it. Do I sell iguana in my restaurant? Absolutely not. That's somebody's pet. But that essence, that history, that ancestral feeling, man, that stuff, I tap into that and I'm like, off. It's to another world. It's a passion and it's a love. Yeah, coupled with that comes the fact that somebody told me, shut up. There's no politics in food. Cállate la boca. There's lots of politics in food. And I love that shit.
Absolutely. You're the second, if not third person, to come on In Your Mouth to talk about, in a very specific way, the feeling of the ancestors coming through. I don't know if you've discovered Michael Twitty, who does a lot of food pathways from... like the food that saved the enslaved and tracing all the foods of the South back to Africa and whatnot. He's incredible. But talking about in certain situations when he's doing the work that he does and he's going on to these plantations or in certain areas where the enslaved were cooking and feeling it. As he's doing it, he's like, it's another world. You're transported into another. He did a masterclass too, like the masterclass show that's on like masterclass TV or whatever that is. And he goes, even in the kitchen, in the studio, right? I had a whole team of people, but the cameramen were like, we saw something completely different, you know? So it's very, very real. Before we cut out to the break, because we could be here for 8 hours at this point. Do you think there's a correlation between being queer and food? Is queer food a thing?
You know what? I'm going to give you my little 1 minute.
Yeah.
I think that it's like sports. When football was just white, It was okay. It was fun to watch. When it became of color, oh, goddamn, move over. The white boys were scared. Like, oh, shit, what are we going to do now? If queers were in the kitchen, there would be no straight boys in the kitchen. There would be no room for them because they all suck. I know that from experience. You get a queer boy in there, everything's so pretty, clean, all that. However, the treatment, right, that they give to anybody who's queer, it keeps you, you don't want to go in there. It's not a safe environment.
No.
There's knives, there's hot plates, there's different languages. I mean, they're mean. They're downright mean. My kitchens have never been mean, but I know a man-run kitchen sucks ass. It really does. They're mean, they're cruel, and it starts with the leadership. And I always say, how can, you know, food is love, not a competition. That's why I never participate in competition shows. Believe me, I've been asked from Iron Chef on down. I'm not going to go cook Funyun tacos, you know, Funyun dessert, put some Funyuns on the flan, candy the Funyuns. You know, I could do that, but it's disrespectful to the people who work toiling, those freaking, you know, my gente in the fields. It's disrespectful to disrespect food like that as a competition, as a toy, as sustenance. Think about the natural resources, the water. Lack of water, and we're over here messing around with food like it's a toy. No. So, I don't even know what your question was, but...
The question was about queer food.
To be loved, to be cherished. So, yes, absolutely. Give me some queer food, and there's room in there. So, you know, way back in the day... I'm a Californian and, you know, San Francisco, when you go out in Castro, you go eat at queer restaurants. You go have breakfast at queer restaurants. You go have your after hours at queer restaurants. That was because we needed to have that safe space and to have that place that was ours. It's changed a lot. But, you know, you have queer servers, front of the house, the bartenders, all that. But I believe we need more back of the house. And there is room there, but unfortunately is the bad treatment that is received. Sometimes is it worth it?
You know, there are people out there doing their thing and, you know, but I get it. Like, they're all doing their thing mostly, like, for themselves and not out in these things, A, because lack of money, and B, because a lot of the treatment is terrible. But you know what? I'm just going to leave it right there for right now because I want to take a quick break. You and I are going to have a tequila or something during the break, and we'll be back with my favorite part and your favorite part of the podcast.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
All right, Chef Silvana, I hope you're ready for my favorite part and the audience's favorite part of the podcast. A little something we like to call Food News Update. Food News?
Ooh, honey,
you ain't ready.
Girl, spill the tea.
News Update.
The Hudson River is now home to 20 million newly deposited oysters. Do you know that the Hudson, they've been dumping oysters into the Hudson River en masse?
Why? Isn't that water polluted?
Well, that's it's part of the reason. They're trying to clean it up. And apparently, oysters are now are natural, like, sanitizers and create these like oyster mm-hmm. reefs for like other things to like come and thrive and grow. And back in the day, apparently, I was reading that the harbor used to be a big like oyster farm. It used to be oysters galore. Would you eat Hudson River oyster?
Well, okay. I eat oysters from other places of the world that, you know, have you walked the beach lately? I have a house in Baja. And when the water comes in, it goes out back out and leaves a little film. And it used to be that you could find little shells and little baby, tiny little anything, mollusk, you name it. What I find now is plastic, microplastic, and micro, I'm just doom and gloom, aren't I? Micro anything, all your trash. So, yeah, I'll eat those damn oysters. At this point, I'm probably full of micro everything.
Yeah, microplastics are very scary. You took us down a scary road. You definitely took us down a very scary road with microplastics.
It's happening really fast, you know. I work with the unhoused, and I've been trying to work against water bottles, and reusable water bottles is better, so.
Yes, yes. I found it.
I feel like Debbie Downer from Saturday Night Live.
No, you're good. You're good. I started off with a serious food news update because I just found it really interesting that they're trying to like kind of revitalize the harbor here in with oysters. Like it wasn't, I would think like some machine would go into the water and clean it up. No, like how smart and like okay. I'm nobody's biologist. You know what I mean?
Well, it's going to take nature to cure the mess that we've made. I'm a scuba diver, and just in 2015, I was diving at a place that I've dove over and over again. And again, I'm in my mask crying because it's dead. The reef is completely, it looks like a rock with memories of what used to be a beautiful coral reef. We're doing that.
Oh, we are doing that, right? And, I mean, wow, what a way to get serious here. We are doing that, but hopefully this is the start of something good, right?
There will be a next generation, but yeah. They're going to find a cure for stupidity.
Yeah, let's hope so. Hope so. And I think we're here for that. I think we are here for the. I wonder if oysters cure stupidity because I know a lot of people
that could have pollution with, you know, the microplastic and the oyster.
Indeed. I think we're totally here for these oysters. Merriam-Webster adds 9 new culinary terms to the dictionary. Isn't that interesting? Do you know that one of them is birria and another one is mojo?
I feel discriminated against. I mean, those are ancient recipes that have been used in our cultures for forever.
Forever. Forever.
It's trendy, and birria because, you know,
it's trendy.
It's trendy and everybody's doing it.
Yes. Yes. The other words, I actually have never had a birria taco. I almost refuse because how popular it is.
Well, it's sacrilegious because they're giving you boiled beef.
Yeah.
Braised beef at best. You know, and doing it in birria style. They should call it birria style, Mexican style. Taco style.
Yeah, taco style.
Oh, tacos.
I've never had it. The other words are banh mi, oat milk, omakase, plant-based, pumpkin spice, ras el hano, or is it hanut? Ras el hano, and sessionable. These are these culinary terms that Merriam-Webster has added to the dictionary.
So basically they're getting more international, or what's the word, exotic?
Exotic, international, the ethnic food aisle.
Yeah.
The food emporium, I don't care if I call them out, the food emporium down the block from me has the Mexican food aisles, and not all of that food is Mexican food. Like,
right, it's because they don't know. It's like at the Mexican stores where there's actually not Mexican owners, because, you know, we're not the capitalists, but the grocery stores where you have fresh peppers.
Yeah.
And you're looking for a poblano pepper. It will never say poblano. It will always say pasilla. Pasilla is nothing to do with the poblano. It's a chilaca that's dry, because it's pasa, like a raisin. Raisin is the term, right? Sun dried. And somebody made a mistake a long time ago, and it's become the norm at the grocery stores. And I find that disrespectful and discrimination. Lack of respect. Like, eh, whatever. They're Mexicans. Eh. You know? Yeah. But when it comes down to appropriating the food, oh, how do you spell that? B-I-R-R-I-A. Birria. That's what it is. You know, let's make money. It's all about capitalism.
Hello. I mean, but yes.
I'm all about capitalism, too. But to the people of the culture.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to go put my cochinita pibil on a Chinese bun. You know,
a bao bun.
Oh, but it'd be good.
You know, I mean, it would be delicious.
Oh my god, that sweetness and
that doughy, like, sticky, delicious.
It'd be delicious, and if you steam it even more. But that's not. I'm not trying to be a fusion chef. Look, I don't even claim to be a Mexican anything. All right, here's the deal, and I'm a Mexican citizen, but my food is not Mexican food. My food is my food. Chef Savannah's food. It says cocina de autor. That's how I describe my food. Cocina de autor. I'm the fucking author. That's my kitchen. The way I dress, the way I look, the way I talk, that's my style. That's who I am. And genuinely, from my heart, and with all that information that I've been studying for years, we're talking about pre-Hispanic Mexican cookbook from the 30s. I study this stuff. I go back and I study with the señoras, the artisanal cooks, not to copy them, to be inspired by them so I could be an authentic chef. And it gets my goat when people come here, people who not, oh, she's queer, let's not go to her restaurant. Oh, she's Mexican, you know. They prefer. It really gets my, where people want their safe food, right? Yeah. Everybody has to look like them. You know, and then they'll want it, their fake sour cream food. And that's fine. Para cada quien su cada cual. There's room for everybody, right? But don't call it, if it says, and I'm telling you guys right now, if it says authentic Mexican food, it's not authentic. A true Mexican doesn't have to put authentic anything in there.
Absolutely. You know? Who knew Food News Update was going to get so political? I did not know, Chef Silvana, I did not know that Merriam-Webster was going to set you off.
Okay. Get me going. What else did you say?
And last but not least, hopefully this one can't be political. Duke's Mayonnaise has a new official mascot by the name of Tubby. He is a big jar of mayonnaise that dances around this Major League Soccer game, I guess. Do you have a thing against the mascots?
Well, yeah, because, you know, how about the chubby people? You know, they're going to be like, Tubby?
Tubby. I didn't even... But it's a big jar of mayonnaise.
You know, white people got that mayonnaise right. I love it.
Do you like mayonnaise? Because the mayonnaise is very controversial. No. I love mayonnaise.
In Mexico, we put mayonnaise on everything. Las tortas. We slap it. You take the mayonnaise, put it on the bread, and then put the bread right on that griddle.
Oh, so delicious.
Mayonnaise hooks right into the bolillo.
Yeah. Delicious.
And we have those tubs already. We have our own little mascots on the cart for the elote. The elote man always has a big old tubby.
Oh, my God. Going back to the corn boy. Have you seen the corn boy?
Finally, my girlfriend had to play it for me because I'm like,
isn't it the cutest thing?
I was like, ¿qué estás haciendo con el corn? It is cute.
I don't think there's anything.
Corn would look a lot like elote de la calle, you know what I'm saying?
Right? Absolutely. Well, I don't know if there's anything more to say about this big jar of mayonnaise. And with that, I think that's the best way to end. Food! food news update. You're going to go to your girlfriend. You're going to be like, I gave this gay boy a run for his money. You are my favorite. I am absolutely obsessed. And now I really need to make it down to Arizona to meet you and to meet Chef Maria Maison, too, who's been on. Do you know her, friend to the pod?
Yes, I know who Maria is.
Right? I'm obsessed with her, too. Right? Arizona has all the badass bitches, if I may say so, with all due respect, okay? In the kitchen.
It's the heat, my dear.
I guess so. I need to do a tour from Phoenix to Tucson, honey, okay? Oh, my God. Really quickly, just because I think our stories are so important and we never know who's listening. And as someone who's lived a whole lot of life, right, can you talk to me about coming out and what your experience was like?
I came out at 1985, and I had a husband I had to leave. And that was easy. The hard part was my parents. And my mother stopped me in my tracks and said, ojos que no ven, corazón que no siente. In other words, shut up, I don't want to hear it. Eyes that don't see, heart that does not feel. She was disappointed that, you know, she tried to make me straight. It didn't work. But that's my coming out story. And it was a struggle, really. I was happy to be queer. Well, I got a good story. I go to, I meet in Florida, Fort Lauderdale, this cute little queer boy. And he was a sex worker. And I didn't know it because I was Mensa, you know. And he goes, girl, I'm going to take you to the gay beach. So we go to the gay beach, and then all of a sudden, everybody started getting up like at 2 o'clock, shaking off, looking good, getting their titties all, nipples all hard, and going across the street, and I said, what's going on? He goes, come on, let's go. So we went to a place, a hotel called the Marlin, and we did a Sunday tea dance. Nobody does that anymore, but man, they should. It was so much fun. But for me, that was my first time at a gay bar. And, you know, I had been, quote unquote, a fake poser as a heterosexual. But I had lived that life. And I'd go to a gay bar, and these queens are drunk on their ass. They're doing poppers. They're doing, you know, all that behavior from the...
Mm-hmm. From it the still 80s. Happens. Poppers are back.
Poppers are back. So it's bareback. Poppers are bareback. Hey.
Oh, my gosh.
You're going old school, retro.
We are. Please, if you're having sex, get on prep and or condoms. Do it safely. We do not promote. Talk to your doctors. We hear on in your mouth.
It's so fucking hard for you guys to fuck it up.
All right. Talk to your medical professionals before you do anything crazy. All right. That's the.
You know, that was my. Pull the little glasses off my little hetero, fake hetero self. And I went, ah, hijos de la chingada. This is what goes on in here. And that was it. That was my coming out. But it was a shock.
Yeah,
and I'm sure, you know, I mean, come on. A few years before that, I was knocking on your door preaching.
Yeah.
Don't forget, that's where I come from.
You know, there's I want to talk to you forever because there's just so much... I feel so connected and so I don't even know. I have no words to describe it except for I'm honored to be in your presence and I'm honored to have you here to have a little piece of you, right? And I thank you for entrusting me.
Oh, the honor's mine.
With that. What's next for you? I know that there's a book, right?
The book. I'm in edits right now. And then after that, before I go doing the cookbook thing, because I will, I love to be able to speak my voice and talk shit. Mm-hmm. And I was able to do that with the biography, right? But I think I want to do a novel about my grandmother. So... And that means the romance, the Mexican Revolution, the wetback roundups, all of that, the 1919 into the Great Depression and then survival into, you know, there's a lot of mysticism and curandera stuff and brujeria and all that good stuff. So yeah. I think I want to do a novel.
All that good stuff. Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. Well, I mean, like I said, this podcast could be 3 hours long if we both had the time. But you have a whole empire to run over there in Phoenix, right? And I have dinner to make here in New York.
Absolutely. We should talk anytime you want. Aquí estoy. You know where to find me. Yeah. And for anybody who's listening to me, be genuine to yourself. Don't let anybody tell you you're not first class, baby, because you're first class all the way. Otherwise, we wouldn't be queer. We rule the world. We're the special ones. Everybody else is just normal, second ass, you know, vanilla, big old tubby full of mayo.
Yep, absolutely. You know, Alexandra Billings spoke at the Human Rights Campaign, like some sort of dinner or gala, and something that she said was, she was telling her story about how she used to be a sex worker and how she's been in jail, and that, you know, these people were so afraid of what she was that they had to create laws to keep her away from her. But she goes, people go around saying that they hate us. She goes, they don't hate us. They don't know us.
Mm-hmm.
How can they hate us if they don't know us? They're afraid.
They're afraid. Yeah.
Which is a big difference. I was like, it's a great speech. In Your Mouth, listeners, go to the Real Alexandra Billings on Instagram. It's there. It's an incredible moment to watch, or anybody out there. Chef Silvana, give everybody the handles. Tell them where they can find you, how Chef they can Silvana, find you.
Chef Silvana on Instagram, and take it from there.
That's it.
ChefSilvana.com.
That's it. And like, all you got to do is Google the articles. I mean, it's hours, if not days, worth of great reading, right? That I've fallen down into this hole.
Yeah. No, for real. No, but that's a life of standing up, acting up, and not giving up, you know, and knowing that the other shoe, we might be cozy right now, but the other shoe's going to drop. And sure shit, it is, isn't it? Reproductive rights out the window, you know. Anyway, yeah. So stay vigil, my friends, because this shit gets heavy.
Yeah, it does.
We got a long fight.
It does. But you know what? If we've proved anything today, is that we can talk about it and still have a good time while doing it, right?
You know it. And cook
eat
shitty food.
Cook and eat
well. And it has nothing to do with money.
I'm coming to Barrio Cafe. I promise you that.
That's
okay?
Pricey, but still.
So listen, well, you know what? I'm at the chef's table, okay, when I come down there, right? Me, Joe Biden, and Kamala Harris, apparently.
I'm short.
All right? Because In Your Mouth, listeners, the president and the VP went to go visit Chef Silvana back a while ago. So you can find that info online, too. Well, In Your Mouth, listeners, it's been a great day, and much thanks to Chef Silvana. In the words of Wendy Williams, you are an icon, you are the moment, and you are a legend. Now, come on now. All right, thank you so much for being here. In Your Mouth, listeners, we are well into September. The weather is changing. The sun is starting to set earlier. NoMeGusta.com. But it is what it is. So let's take in every last minute of vitamin D and good times that we can before we are in the cold and dark and the seasonal depression. All right, let's start storing all of the good vibes and good times that will carry us through the winter if you are in a place that changes seasons like I am. Take care of yourselves out there. Go do something good for someone. You know, a little bit of kindness is free and can go a long way. And other than that, all I have to say is thank you for listening to In Your Mouth.
In La Boca.
In Your Mouth.
I got the goosebumps.